Hi, this is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpacked podcast. I have Martin with me today. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, not bad. It's another lovely day, or middle of the day, I suppose, almost. You know, depends.
Yeah, it is.
Depends when we recorded this. I can't honestly remember. Anyway, this week, or in this podcast anyway, we have two guests. And we have two guests that we've had on the show before. But the last time we did this, we actually did it in their office, whereas this time we're doing it remotely. So we have Sazala Reddy and we have Tushar Agarwal from Daytrim. Hi, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
How are you doing? Nice and early for you chaps, I guess.
It is nice. It's a nice California weather.
Ah, lovely. Wonderful. So we've had you on the podcast before and we talked about DVX, which is your flagship platform, which we'll go over in a minute. But we're here to talk as well about a new product you've got called CloudShift. So whichever one of you wants to start first, just give us 10 seconds on what CloudShift is and then we'll go back and we'll sort of phrase it in terms of where DVX sits and that will help explain the product itself. So who wants to just give us a sort of 10 second description of it?
So if you look at any traditional systems out there in the enterprise, people think about disaster recovery. So CloudShift is a way to kind of make that process simpler by migrating workloads from one place to other in an automated way.
Effectively, from what I've seen of the stuff that you've got online and all the different presentations, and I've watched a couple of the videos you've recorded, which are all great, and we'll put some links to that. It looks to me like you will be using VMware on AWS. So obviously, this is a bit more than just a product sale. This is a SaaS offering, I think. So it's slightly structured slightly differently.
Yep, that is correct. So it is a SaaS-based DR orchestrator software so that you don't have to manage and maintain it.
Why don't we just take a step back, though, for people who may not have heard about DVX or what DVX is, although we can point them to the podcast and get them to have a look at that, maybe just 30 seconds, a minute to describe what DVX is and how that architecture is slightly different to, say, a traditional HCI architecture.
So at Daytrim, we provide a unified hybrid cloud platform. It's for running your mission-critical applications, so really high performance. You can run it on-prem. And we also have a integrated cloud data mobility and also have built-in backup. So we have a unique architecture, which is like a two-layer architecture. So HCI is one layer. We are the next generation of the HCI, which is the two-layer architecture. The advantages are that you can basically get high performance and you can also scale capacity independent of each other. So the entire platform is built to deal with the data lifecycle. So the data lifecycle is how do you run your applications at high performance? How do you protect it? And how do you prepare for DR? And how do you want to move it to the cloud? So it's an end-to-end data stack platform which can basically manage and run your applications.
So typically you could run standard VMware VMs on this, or you could run containers, you could run bare metal.
Correct. It is a virtualized platform for virtualized workloads like containers. I mean, all the new style, cloud style apps and the virtualization apps.
That gives us a bit of a background about what DVX is. But then fairly quickly, you brought out something called Cloud DVX, which I think basically is essentially a way to back up a DVX virtual instance or an instance running on your platform.
Yeah. So our goal was to help be the hybrid cloud platform where we can allow you to run your workloads in any cloud. And especially it's very useful for a DR scenario to run workloads in the cloud. So to get there, the first step we did was to have backup in the cloud, which is what's called Cloud DVX.
That exists in a way that allows people to back things up, but then just restore at the moment. It wasn't like you were allowing it people to run their workloads at that point in the cloud. You could only really sort of put the data there and then restore it, I guess.
That's true. It was step one of our journey. And it's as simple as an iPhone backup. You know, you just click a button and then you can start backing up to the cloud. It has global dedupe and all other cool features so that it's really, really cost effective to kind of store backups in the cloud.
Okay. So those sort of things were built in. And we had that in our previous presentation. So we can point people at that podcast for a bit more detail. Now, recently you announced CloudShift, which is, I guess, in some respects slightly different in the sense that it's a SaaS offering. So we talked about that slightly already, but we'll come back to that in more detail. But this is actually to allow people to move workloads into a public cloud environment.
That is correct.
Okay.
It's also useful for moving workloads from prem to prem or prem to cloud. So basically multiple ways.
Okay. Let's start with describing what it is, and then we can talk about how we think people might use it in that context.
So we have backups in the cloud, and the next thing people are looking to see is that how can they get rid of the second data center? It's a very simple use case, and the cloud provides a simple path. So the first thing you need to do is to have a DR orchestration service, and that service It's like simple, like it's like SRM is probably the most common, the most popular one. So we built our own DR orchestrator because it's, we wanted to make it more simpler and we wanted to make it more integrated with the, all the, like the, with the new ways of doing things. So it's a SaaS service. It's called CloudShift and it runs in, runs in Amazon. You just have to consume it. You set up your policies. Mostly you set up backup policies on your groups of VMs called, we call them protection groups. And then you set up these policies, like runbook automation in the CloudShift DR orchestrator software. And you set up all these rules and regulations on how you want your workloads to fail over in case there is a disaster. So when there is a disaster on your on site, you can push a button and we will automatically take the workloads, take all the backups, the most recent ones or even in the past, and launch them dynamically and create a new software-defined SDDC VMware cloud on AWS and launch the servers on demand and copy the workloads into that VMware environment in the cloud. So what you get then is a quick, like a low RPO and a quick failover into the cloud, and you only pay when there is a disaster.
If I was running a few hundred VMs, you would effectively, you would instance a VMware on AWS environment for me, and then you would actually then restore the VMs into that environment.
That is correct. So, and then you also only pay for those VMware servers on demand when there is a problem for, like, well, let's say 1 week.
Right. Okay. So for anybody who hasn't used VMware on AWS, obviously, that not everybody may have heard about it. This is a platform where effectively you're running VMware software, so the existing vSphere software, but running on Amazon's hardware in Amazon's data center. But the idea is that the look and feel is still a bit like, it's still meant to be a look and feel of vSphere. So customers are comfortable with it and they're familiar with it. And then this environment comes up on Amazon's hardware. So you effectively get, I guess, almost like a managed service environment in terms of having a vSphere platform that you can run applications on.
That's correct. So one of the things, if you look at any DR, like on a failover to the cloud, one of the challenges people have been, struggling with is how do you get operational consistency? What that means is that if you move from one place to another place, like if it doesn't look the same and doesn't behave the same, you have to change your tools, you have to change your workflows, which is kind of almost impossible for a lot of people. So VMware Cloud allows that operational consistency where you will get the same look and feel, same tools will work. So VMware provides that high level view. And what we have done is that we have an end-to-end stack, which makes the data movement to be very fluid and very efficient.
You're giving the value add of being able to take your backup images and you do the effectively orchestration of the environment. That's what the customer is getting from using your software.
That is correct. It's an end-to-end stack. There is no such offering I'm aware of, an end-to-end offering which I'm aware of. So there's some advantages you get from end-to-end stack. Also, there are significant advantages. I can talk about it in a minute.
So from a customer's perspective, how do you make money out of it? Because obviously VMware are going to charge for the spinning up of those servers. And I'm not entirely sure. I did look into it and I think it is charged by an hour on an hourly basis, although you can do commit for more long-term stuff. So are you passing through that charging directly, or is the customer expected to have an account with them? You know, do you literally take the whole thing away from them and let them and run it for them on their behalf?
It's a good question. So we do want to make money. It's a for-profit business. So firstly, we make money by having the cloud DVX. First of all, you need the backups to be there to actually do the failover properly. So we make money on that first. And then secondly, our DR orchestrator software, like the CloudShift, will also be licensed in some form so that we make money from that also. And ultimately, in the future, one day, we'll be primary storage. I can't go into details right now. And in that sense, we'll also make money then.
Okay. If I was a customer, clearly this avoids me having to buy a secondary data center. And I guess at the end of the day, I can estimate my costs in terms of recovery time based on knowing what you're charging on an hourly basis, plus how long I think I might be out of running production. It's reasonably okay to be able to estimate how much you think your costs are going to be.
That's true. And also, in a lot of cases, the insurance company, they pay for your disaster. So it also probably, for some companies, it mitigates that cost also. But most people can estimate like maybe a 1 week or 2 week downtime maybe per year. Seems reasonable.
I don't know about you, Martin, but the first thing I think when I see any of this sort of service is not necessarily how will I get there. In my mind, I always think, how will I get back?
Actually, I have two questions. From my point of view, is that how do I get there? How do I get back? And how do I test it?
Yeah, good questions. So let me answer all of them. Firstly, how do you get there is because firstly, we set up these backups in AWS. So your backups are right there and our DR orchestration software is right there. So if your primary site fails, all of the backups in the DR orchestrator are going to coordinate and move the workloads into we're going to auto deploy the VMware Cloud software defined data center servers and then deploy them. That one seems pretty straightforward. There's no conversion of VMs. It's just copying the VMs into, just kind of converting the VMs, basically making VMware use those workloads. That's pretty straightforward because it's VMs on prem, it's VMs in the cloud. So like, there's no conversion, nothing to do there. Okay. And secondly, our CloudShift reorchestration software, because we have an end to end stack, it does continuous checks nonstop to make sure that you're always in compliance. One of the problems with the DR orchestration software is that it's very fragile, it's very brittle, you don't know whether it's going to work or not. And so it does compliance checks all the time so that, for example, if one of your VMs is deleted and it's part of the plan, it'll tell you that there is a problem. You can go fix it or you can go change it. Or if your topology, network topology has changed and your kind of replication is broken, it'll tell you there's a problem. So the goal of the CloudShift operation, the regular operations, is to make sure that you're fully in compliance checks end-to-end all the time. This is only possible you can do if you own the stack end-to-end, which is kind of what we have. And then the other one is that you can create automated schedule testing for the DR plans. You can say, hey, in every week or every month or every quarter, schedule a automated DR test to be happening by itself. So what we will do in that case is that, let's say you say every month, test my DR automatically. The CloudShift DR orchestrator will automatically every month create the software-defined data center, launch the workloads in a test bubble, bring up and follow the rules. And if there is a wait for the customer's input, it'll wait and then break it down and then be done with it and then give you a report that the DR was successful. So you get this compliance checks almost all the time, and then you get this automated DR testing to make sure that you're in compliance. Let that make sure that actually it will run when actually there is a DR scenario. So both of these things put together kind of give you that guarantee that, you know, that fail-proofness of having the DR that you can depend on. And the last question you asked was about failback. I believe failback is as important, if not more, than failover. So if you're running your workloads on VMware Cloud after the disaster, we will do backups of that workloads back into the cloud DVX, and with the push of a button in the CloudShift orchestrator, we will move that workloads back to your on-prem. And in most disasters, the on-prem site is probably not destroyed or kind of caught a fire. It's probably temporarily down for some other reason because of some infrastructure problems. So when it comes back up, most of the data is still there. So when we copy the data back, it'll only be that 1 terabyte or 2 terabytes which changed in the 1 week, which is really fast to move. And also it doesn't have the egress cost. Again, there is no conversion of VMs, and also the provenance of the VMs are maintained. Like, because there's no conversion, we know what the VMs are, we know where they came from. So we kind of preserve the entire history of where all these snapshots came from, where all the data come from, so that you get this history of, hey, you can look at it and understand, you know, your provenance history. So does that make sense? Sorry, I spoke a long time.
That makes perfect sense. Certainly failing back is, as you say, is important. It's bound to fail to DR. I think that's a given. I think that's so often forgotten by people. You ask people, are you have a DR plan. Okay, you've gone to DR now. How do you get it back? And everybody in the room scratches their head and said, not quite sure. So you've got a very small RPO, but what about things like RTOs as well? So how quickly is this failover?
Yeah. So from prem to prem, the RTO is like near zero. That's because our system's already provisioned the prem to prem. But prem to cloud, we do have to provision the software-defined data center. It does take an hour today. They'll probably improve it. And then we do have to copy the workloads. For 1.0, we do have to copy the workloads, the data into the VMware cloud, which takes a little bit of time. So that depends. That's a variable depending on how much workload you have.
Yeah.
In the future, one day we aim to be primary storage. I can't go into too much details, but that in that case, the RTO will be zero. Or near zero.
Okay. So let me just ask you a question on that, because clearly for a lot of customers, that recovery time objective, recovery point objective, which is what we're talking about, is really important for them to deliver to their own customers. Is there any, or are there any given guarantees by VMware that when you go and ask to provision an environment of VMware running on AWS, that you will get it within a certain timeline? Is there any SLA around that, or is it really more about best efforts as to how long we think it would take to provision?
I don't know if there's an SLA agreement. I think they're getting better every day,
right?
Because there's more and more customers, I think, who are kind of using VMware Cloud. I haven't seen the SLAs yet, but so far what we've tested, it tends to be around an hour or so. We believe they will make it better as time goes on.
I guess the only thing I can see from that as a service is that there's a real supply and demand issue with that, in the sense that depending on what people are intending to use it for, whether it was spinning it up for a week or a month or a day or an hour, they may or may not seed different locations with capacity in order to achieve that. So I guess it's going to be a sort of a real
But the capacity is not managed by them so much as my capacity is managed by Amazon. So I think that's the beauty of it, is that Amazon provides the capacity, which is kind of what they're good at.
Let me, I guess, qualify that slightly in the sense that I don't know whether they're running that on hardware that is absolutely identical to every other hardware that they would normally deploy. So you imagine, you know, when they build a data center out and they're provisioning equipment, whether this is the same style and design of server that would be used for everything else. So it doesn't matter whether somebody comes along and says, give me another 1,000 VMs, sorry, EC2 instances, or somebody says, give me a VMware on AWS environment, whether they can use the same hardware. Because obviously, if they're keeping hardware separate, then that might make it more difficult for them to be as on-demand as they need to be. But it sounds to me like your testing is showing that they're doing it fairly quickly anyway.
Yeah, that's what it's showing us. I guess it's a chicken and egg problem. They will see more demand, and they'll probably keep increasing their how they supply this SLA agreement. I think it's a catch 22. I think it's one of those things where you have to. I think demand has to grow up, and then they'll probably keep adding to it. But remember, on-prem, you know, we think about RTO and all that stuff. But if you look at on-prem to on-prem, it is like there are four vendors involved to do the on-prem to on-prem DR. It's very complicated, and most times it doesn't even work. I had a customer who told us that he hopes there's no disaster in the first place, and he hopes that if there's a disaster, he dies with the disaster, so he doesn't deal with that disaster.
I think that's rather a sad way to have to think about the way that you handle your disaster, I must admit.
Because if you go to any enterprise, it's very complex. None of them actually work very well, and then they're always struggling to make this actually work.
So when you say prem to prem, are you meaning customers who are using SRM to do their recovery, site recovery manager?
Or some scripts or something. So there are four vendors. Like there's a primary storage vendor, there's a backup vendor, there's backup software, and there is the DR orchestrator software. There's four pieces need to work together to somehow manage to fail over your data center.
So one of the things I think that strikes me as being quite important in this, and I'd be interested to understand how it's handled, and that's you're obviously able to backup VMs, which is great, and instances that are running on an existing VMware environment. But when somebody moves to the cloud and has to run their environment on the VMware instance in sitting whichever data center it moves to, there's a lot of additional configuration work that needs to go into building that environment to make it look either like the on-prem one or integrated with the customer's network. Where's all of that stuff stored, and how is that going to get managed by your environment in order to make sure that that's correct for the customer?
Yeah, so the CloudShift DR orchestrator software, there are a bunch of input we expect from the customer that you can set up how your topology, how your VMs should boot, what's the network topology you must use, and a bunch of things like that, what data center and what cluster, like all those various configurations you have to input in the beginning one time. And so when we fail over into the VMware cloud, we are the ones who will set up all of these networks and all of the clusters and data, I mean all those different VMware objects, so that it looks and reflects how you want it to look.
Okay, there's two things there. First of all, that's a little bit of work to remember every time they change something or they do any sort of modification on the primary environment. They need to think through the implications for DR, which I'd expect they would do anyway if they had a DR environment. So it's a change of process, but not necessarily something new for them.
The good news is that if there is something out of compliance, we'll at least warn them about it.
Okay, so there is some sort of automation behind that. And that was going to be the next question, really, how you're handling this, because traditionally up to this point, you've not really been a SaaS provider. So as a model of operation, I guess it's different for you as well.
That's true. But as of the beginning of the year, we started being a SaaS provider because we started shipping the Cloud DBX backup service. So we already have lots of customers already adopt that offering because it's very compelling. So we already are a SaaS provider. This is the next offering. We are kind of on that path.
Okay, got you. It all sounds pretty interesting. And I guess anybody who is looking to work out how they would do a DR for a traditional environment, this might be a great solution that allows them to get into the public cloud without having to convert VMs. And that's, I think, quite a positive thing. But where does it go next? What's the sort of the next step from here?
Yeah, so we've been talking to a lot of customers. And, you know, as you know, a lot of people are in different phases of their journey to the cloud in some form or the other. And in talking to a lot of these customers, it is clear that it'll be a hybrid cloud environment. It won't be all like one cloud or the other. It'll be definitely be a hybrid cloud for some time. And in talking to these people, one thing I've clearly understood is that nobody really cares about Amazon, Azure, or Google. They just think of them as a cloud vendor. They don't want to be locked in. They think, you know, each one has its unique properties, but if you go to the CIO level, the CIO does not want to be locked in by any of these vendors. That's number one. And the number two issue is that if you're going to have data in your on-prem and the cloud, like all of these different places, it's all has become a now all these silos that exist everywhere. If you don't have a unified way of managing it, it becomes a little challenging. And the third thing is the life cycle. So life cycle, you know, if so, the only thing of lasting value in a data center is data. Everything else changes, you know, your cloud, your infrastructure, your apps change, but the data is of lasting value. And also what's of lasting, you know, process is the life cycle, like running applications, analyzing the data, storing it and backing it up and protecting it and looking for DR. So we really think about the data life cycle. So our platform is really built for how do you manage the entire data life cycle end to end is kind of what we think about. This is not the way most people think about the problem. If you look at HCI vendors, I mean, they don't think like this. So we're the only unique platform which thinks like this. So where we're going with this is that we want to allow, because of this unique nature of our platform, we want to allow customers to run their workloads and be able to run and protect their workloads in any cloud. And we want to be able to provide this capability that you can push a button and move your workloads from one place to the other without having the lock-in problem. And thirdly, we want to provide you a governance model so that you can manage and govern and set provenance and compliance regulations on all your data, no matter where it is.
That's not an insignificant challenge, I would say.
Actually, we have done that path quite deeply already. A lot of things we have not exposed yet, and you'll be seeing more SaaS offerings from us in the next near future. Okay. So if you look at all our innovations is now on SaaS based, because we have a good foundation. We are a unique company which has like all of these data lifecycle features, and I think we are in the right path to kind of make a significant impact in how people think about it.
So, Martin, I mean, I'm looking at thinking that the idea of going down the SaaS route is interesting, because I mean, it's not the first company that's doing a SaaS offering, but it's certainly interesting that we're seeing more SaaS-based solutions coming out of this out of the market, especially for data.
Yeah, I think SaaS seems to be the direction we're moving in for this. It works very well, and it certainly works very well for people who are running some kind of hybrid environment as well, who haven't gone completely all in on a public cloud. So, yeah, I think you're right. We are seeing more offerings in this space.
Brilliant. So, guys, I guess you're presenting at VMworld. You're attending VMworld. I'm not. Martin's not. Couldn't make it this year again, unfortunately. But I guess you are. Are you presenting anything that is going to be of interest?
Yeah. So we have, of course, a booth in VMworld, but also we have 4 or 5 different sessions we are talking at the VMworld. I'm particularly myself. I'm giving a talk with a customer, one of our customers from Sonoma County. The title of the talk is Automatic Failover to AWS when your data center is on fire. So as you know, in California, there are fires, and especially in Sonoma County, it's a very hot topic these days. So it's a good talk. It's very interesting, and I will describe how the customer is experiencing their pain and what they expect from us and how we do cloud shift. And unfortunately, the session is full right now. I hope they can create another session maybe.
Okay, we'll add the details of the session that you're presenting at in the show notes. But I guess when you said hot topic, that wasn't meant to be a pun at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't mean it. Yeah, sorry if I was using it the wrong way.
No, I know what you mean. I'm only joking. Okay, so sounds good. I'll put that in the show notes. But I guess if anybody wants to find more details, they can come and find you at datrium.com. What about things like Twitter and social media?
So Twitter for me is Sazala, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, as in the person who has the most unique first name, I think you said to me last time.
That's true.
What about the company? Is it at Datrium?
Yes.
Okay, so we can find you there and we can find you on LinkedIn. So I'll put that in the show notes as well. So thanks very much for this quick chat. I think it's really interesting to see the idea of how you're moving DR to be more of a service, but actually allowing it to integrate with your technology. But it'll be really interesting to see where it goes in the future. Don't know about you, Martin, but I think, you know, seeing how customers manage their DR going forward, I think is going to be a really interesting issue with public cloud.
I think it's actually a real step forward. I think we're going to see people actually beginning to manage their DR instead of just hoping.
That's a good point. Okay, thanks, guys, and look forward to catching up with you again. And thanks for joining us.